M. Eredith plus one theory by Lally Brock. Pairing McKay Shepherd, McKay Shepherd. Rating NC-17. Read by LibraryChick 94. 8 months before right now. It all happened a lot faster than John realized, because one minute they were all chatting about the ZPM and how the Nilthenians would be happy to let them take it, after the ritual, of course. Sigh. Yeah, of course. And the next minute, he and McKay were being whisked away to the preparation rooms, and someone was handing him a washcloth and tugging at his jacket. "Hey," he said, as one of the young women pulled his coat off and another started in on the bottom of his shirt. "What's with the... whoa, okay, why do I need to take off my pants?" The woman holding his coat blushed and giggled, turning away from him to hang it on the back of a nearby chair. An older woman entered the room carrying a tray loaded with little bottles and pots, and she gave the giggling girl a stern look. "I am Garina. Please forgive her. This is Aina's first time in the preparation chamber. She will soon see that this is a sacred rite and not something to be taken lightly." Aina looked properly chastened, but John could see the blush still staining her cheeks. "Sure, whatever, but why do I have to take off my pants?" Garina looked him up and down, frowning. "Surely you do not wish to enter the sacred chamber in your military garb?" John looked down at himself. "Well, yeah, actually." She shook her head. "No, of course you do not. These garments have been specially crafted for this ritual." She opened the wardrobe and pulled out a shimmery blue material that looked to John suspiciously like a silk robe. He put up his hands. "Okay, hang on. Someone better tell me exactly what I'm supposed to do in this ritual." The other girls in the room stared at him for a moment until they all started giggling. This time even Garina gave him a startled look. "You mean you have never... well... normally the participants in the ritual have at least some experience." She stepped a little closer and peered at him. "I must say, I am surprised. For someone of your age and face, well, that is of little consequence. I will explain the details while you undress." John crossed his arms. "I'm not taking off anything." Garina looked scandalized. "It is possible to complete the ritual mostly clothed, but it is infinitely more pleasurable for both people if you are undressed." And then John finally got it. "Wait a minute," he started, but caught a face full of robe, as sure and determined hands began unbuckling his belt. Right now. When Rodney opened his eyes and found himself crumpled on the lab floor, he allowed himself a brief joyous moment of, "I'm not dead, I'm not dead," followed almost immediately after by, "Take that, Zelenka!" He heard Radek say, "That was unexpected," from somewhere behind him, and he struggled to his feet, finger poised and ready for some pointing and gloating. Which was when he really looked at the lab he'd woken up in and realized that he was surrounded by a group of familiar faces and a few unfamiliar ones, all of them staring at him with a mixture of curiosity and confusion. "What happened?" he managed. Radek just blinked at him from behind a console, where he stood next to a pretty blondish woman Rodney didn't recognize. "Radek, what happened?" he said again, and Radek's eyes got very big. He shot a nervous look at the woman, who shrugged and shook her head. Radek cleared his throat. "We are not sure. One minute there was nothing, and then there you are." "What do you mean?" Rodney snapped. "I was there the whole time." "Wasn't I?" Radek shook his head. "No. Wherever you were before, it was not here." Rodney felt a little tickle of dread. "You don't recognize me? Any of you?" His stomach sank as everyone in the room shook their heads. 6 months before right now. McKay had been staring at the computer and humming quietly for 20 minutes before Radek finally broke. "All right, what is wrong with you?" "Sorry, what?" McKay said distractedly, glancing up from the screen. "I said, what is wrong? You seem disturbingly easygoing this morning." That earned Radek an eye roll. "I am not." "You are. Should I be afraid?" "Oh, for God's sakes, I'm just tired, all right? I haven't been sleeping very well." Radek frowned. "Being tired does not make you easygoing, McKay. It does not make you sing little songs. It makes you irritable and snappish. Also, the experiment we have been working on for 2 days has just failed again, and usually this means you pout like a little baby and question my manhood." "Seriously, you're starting to believe your own hype." "I am willing to admit that I sometimes forget that the stories I tell the new scientists are not entirely without hyperbole, but still, I feel suspicious of your goodwill." McKay glared at him. "Maybe I just don't want to waste my energy on complaining. Did you ever think of that?" "No, and I am not the only one to notice this, you realize. Yesterday we..." He broke off when Elizabeth's voice came over the radio. "Dr. McKay?" "Yes? Did you forget we have a meeting this morning?" Right now, in fact. Sorry, I'll be right there. And now we are forgetting meetings, Radek said, peering over his glasses. Grabbing the tablet with one hand and a coffee cup with the other, McKay hurried out, yelling, Remember, I'll know if you plan a takeover while I'm gone! Leaving Radek to stare suspiciously at the empty door. And now. Oh, no, I think I need to speak to whoever's in charge. That would be me, the woman next to Radek said, and Rodney felt a little tickle of dread expand into full-blown panic. You don't have a Dr. McKay? He demanded, trying to keep his voice steady and trying not to imagine any of the terrible things that must have happened for him not to be here. Radek gave him a curious look. No, we do, but who are you? I'm Dr. Rodney McKay, and I think I've just come from an alternate timeline. He trailed off because the moment he'd said his name, everyone in the room had gasped and started whispering furiously. Oh, God, what if he was hideously deformed in this timeline? Was that why no one could recognize him? Radek started jabbering into his radio, and the woman next to him was peering at Rodney so curiously he almost felt the urge to cover himself. Look, I know this is strange, believe me, I know, but I'm reasonably sure time is something of a factor. I need to speak to your McKay. The woman narrowed her eyes and crossed her arms. Fine, you're looking at her. I'm Dr. McKay. Back to 8 months before. John had tried to explain to Garina that he understood the mechanics of the ritual, but that he didn't understand the why. Sadly, she didn't believe him, and he had to endure listening to a woman who reminded him of his grandmother say things like, Use firm but smooth strokes once you have entered her, and take her from behind and be certain to stimulate her center. After he had dazedly agreed that he'd remember to lick up, John, up, Garina patted his cheek and pushed him into the adjoining room. He spotted McKay out on the balcony, and resolutely locking away the memory of Garina using a peach for demonstration, slid open the glass door and joined her outside. She turned and looked him up and down. John was really glad he'd been able to slip his boxers back on when Garina wasn't looking, and pulled at his robe self-consciously. McKay smirked at him and crossed her arms when John arched an eyebrow back at her. She was dressed in a similar style, although her robe was red, and her hair had been twisted into braids and arranged intricately on top of her head. Her cheeks were rosy, and her lips were plumped and slick, and when she moved her hands to grip the edge of the railing, John's suspicions that it wasn't just cold in the conference room, Shepard, were validated. He tried not to stare too obviously at her chest, and leaned against the railing in a way he hoped looked nonchalant. McKay seemed to buy it, because she stopped giving him the fisheye and went back to staring out at the wide expanse of green lawn their balcony overlooked. "Don't say a word, Shepard," McKay said. "They insisted on the hair." John wasn't going to say it because he wasn't suicidal, but he was really glad they had. It made him want to work his fingers through it, and, man, he had it so bad it was embarrassing. For whatever reason, McKay had decided early on that John was some kind of intergalactic gigolo, always on the lookout for his next whatever. Okay, it was true that he'd gotten lucky with Tyr, Virgin, and Chaya. He told everyone that it was just a connection. This was a total lie. And that woman on PX9593 with the pigtails. But it was all casual. He hadn't been invested, no matter how much they might have wanted him to be. What McKay did not seem to realize was that when John actually liked someone, like really liked someone, he was an idiot. He was stupid about them. In fact, John had made himself a promise never to repeat the summer of 1984 when Evie Cooper, the meanest and most awesome girl in his lifeguarding class, broke up with him and he listened to Boys Don't Cry on repeat for 3 straight days. The problem here was that he really, really liked McKay. Hence the reason that he'd kept her embarrassingly huge crush under tight wraps, only to be taken out late at night. And sometimes, lots of times, the shower. Now there was lingerie in the mix, hugging the swell of her hips, and seriously, the cleavage on display was a sight to behold. John dragged his eyes back up to her face and tried very hard not to think of words like creamy. Shepard? McKay snapped her fingers in front of his face. Are you okay? Are you having a stroke? He batted her hand away. No, sorry. I'm fine. She gave him an unreadable look before turning and going back into the main room. He shook his head and tried to pull it together before following her in. "So, did they tell you, what we're supposed to do?" she asked, looking uncharacteristically uncertain. He rubbed the back of his neck. "Yeah, in pretty explicit detail." "Oh, really? How explicit?" John felt his cheeks heat. "Pretty explicit." She looked down at the table, which was piled high with native fruits and assorted finger foods. Garina had mentioned that sometimes people performing the ritual felt pressured and were, in her utterly horrifying words, unable to go to completion, and that the fruit and drinks were helpful for replenishment. John would bet his dick that was code for aphrodisiacs. So, are we going to do this thing or what? Oh, he was a little startled by her matter-of-fact tone. Garina said we had all night. Yes, yes, I'm sure you're a stallion, she said, rolling her eyes. But the sooner we do this, the sooner we can take the ZPM back to Atlantis. No, I meant maybe we could eat something first, he snapped. Jesus, you thought I was just going to hop on and ride for Atlantis? Oh, eating sounds good. She looked away, her cheeks flushed. I'm sorry, okay? I'm not really sure what to say in a sex ritual kind of setting. He looked at her steadily. Look, are you okay with this? I mean, we don't have to do anything you don't want to. She gave him a tight smile. If we don't, we don't get the ZPM, and we need the ZPM. But I don't want you to do anything that makes you feel uncomfortable. Hey, I know. So, do you want to do it? John tried not to wince. Smooth Talking 101 with John Shepherd. McKay shrugged lightly, not looking at him. I'll do it, if you want to. John stared at the wall behind her. It's not, you know, a hardship for me. I mean, yeah, no, me too. Not a hardship, that is, she said, examining one of the bottles intently. Oh, really? Well, yeah. Well, great. John shifted on his feet and looked out the window while McKay twisted the ribbons on the tablecloth. Now. Rodney just stood there gaping. But now he could kind of see it. She looked a little like Jeannie with rounder cheeks. A lot like his mother, actually, and wow, he had not been expecting this. Though he wasn't sure why he was so surprised. There was absolutely no reason why gender would remain constant in every timeline. Are you all right? She asked. I don't know why we're so surprised. There's absolutely no reason why gender would remain constant in every timeline. Startled, he waved his hand at her. Yes, I know. I'm fine. It's just... God, you look like Mom. Then she looked startled. Her face softened into a little smile. Better her than Aunt Nancy. Do you have... Rodney laughed. I'd be willing to bet Aunt Nancy is a constant. Rodney relaxed a little. A McKay was a McKay, penis or not, and the sooner they could both start working on how in the hell to get him back, the better. Which was, of course, when Shepard and a fully armed contingent of Marines burst into the room. Both McKays threw their hands into the air, Rodney because there were six P-90s aimed at his face, the other because she was busy shouting. What the hell, Shepard? It's fine. He's Rodney McKay. He's me from a... But Rodney didn't hear the rest of it, because as the other him, her, was being hustled toward the door by Shepard, he'd gotten a glimpse of her hugely pregnant stomach. Thankfully, somebody stunned him. Back again to 8 months before. Uncomfortable moments of silence passed until John blurted out, "So do you want to eat something?" McKay grinned, looking relieved. "You know me, I can always eat." They both sat at the little round table, and she gave him a sheepish look. I think the food is supposed to be an aphrodisiac. One of the women told me that. Yeah, they told me that, too. She lifted a round little tuber. I don't know if they're aphrodisiacs like oysters or if they're, you know, alien aphrodisiacs. John stared down at a plate of something that looked vaguely asparagus-like. Yeah, I kind of wonder that myself. He shook his head and reached over, plucking something that looked like a cross between a strawberry and a pear from the bowl. He raised it in her direction. Well, here goes nothing, he said, and popped it into his mouth. It was surprisingly delicious, crisp and sweet, with a buttery tang that melted on his tongue. McKay was watching him intently. Not citrusy at all. He grabbed a long banana-like thing from the bowl and took a bite of that, too. Looks like you're good to go. She gave him a little grin and grabbed another one of the banana things. She put the length of it into her mouth and pulled it out, dragging her teeth along the sides. It was the sort of unintentionally erotic thing that McKay seemed to do all the time, and John felt his dick tighten a little as she worked the fruit in and out of her mouth. McKay licked her lips and smiled. It's good. Yeah, he managed, and grabbed one of the peach things that Garina had shown him earlier. He tried not to think about the lesson that had gone along with it, and took a bite. It was juicy, and he had to lick the sides of the fruit quickly to keep the juice from spilling onto his hand. When he looked up, McKay was staring at him, her mouth slightly open. Sorry, he said thickly and hastily swallowed the rest of the fruit. It's kind of messy. Her cheeks were flushed and she gave him a sheepish shrug before snagging one of the pastries from a multi-tiered tray. It looked a little like a wedge of pale creamy fudge, but when she bit down, it crunched against her teeth. Oh, I thought it was going to be soft, but it's more like, what, a Jolly Rancher? Her tongue darted out to lick up one side and down the other, and John found himself staring as she swirled her tongue over and around the candy. Tasty, she said. John swallowed, heavily. Yeah, looks like. She grabbed another piece off the plate and held it out to him. Try it. 6 months before. Shepard crossed his arms and shook his head. Hey, no way. I had explained One Tree Hill last week. This one's all you. Still, it seems like you should be the one trying to explain the American shows to the aliens, McKay sniffed. Then she looked down at her plate and frowned. I don't want this jello. Ronan, want it? Ronan gave her a funny look, but reached over and swiped it, obviously trying to do it before she changed her mind. McKay pushed away from the table and went back up to the food line. When she came back and sat down, she was frowning. What's wrong? Taylor asked. They're out of the banana pudding, McKay said, her frown deepening. I really wanted banana pudding. Shepard pushed his fruit cup at her. Here, there's bananas in this. McKay looked at it and bit her lip. Ronan peered at her from under his bangs. Are you crying? Yes, McKay said, sounding horrified. There's no banana pudding and I'm crying. She stood up and wiped furiously at her eyes with the back of her hand. I'm leaving right now. Shepard stared after her as she hurried out of the room. He turned back to Taylor and Ronan. What just happened? Ronan shrugged, apparently content to enjoy his ill-gotten jello. Taylor knew she wasn't the only one who had noticed McKay's changed behavior lately, but she was surprised that neither Ronan nor Shepard seemed to have put the pieces together. She looked at Shepard, who was still staring after McKay with a confused look, and at Ronan, who was using his fingers to scrape the last bits of jello from the cup. She shook her head. On second thought, she was not so surprised. Once more to 8 months before. Maybe it was because she was licking her lips, chasing the sticky sweetness with her tongue, or maybe the fruit really was an aphrodisiac. Whatever it was, it made John feel reckless enough to lean forward and take the candy from her hand with his mouth. His teeth nipped the very edge of her fingertips, and she sucked in a breath, her eyes widening. It is tasty, he said, sucking on the candy. Her eyes were on his lips, his throat, and when he swallowed, she swallowed too. Told you, she said, her voice hoarse. She cleared her throat and wet her lips, and just as John was about to ask for another taste, she leaned forward and said, I'm going to kiss you. Even better. Okay, John said, and leaned in. Their lips met softly, a little tentatively. Hers were still sticky from the fruit, and John darted out his tongue to taste. She slid her hand up the back of his neck into his hair, and he tightened his arm around her waist, pulling them both up until they were standing pressed tightly together. She sighed a little, and he took advantage of it, slipping his tongue in to mingle with hers. That was about all it took for things to get hot, fast, and they twisted around each other, his hands cupping her ass, both of them frantic with wet kisses. They stumbled blindly toward the bed until Meredith's knees hit the mattress. She pulled him forward with one hand wound tight in his robe, and John followed her, kissing her the whole way down. He shifted to slide his knees up between her thighs, and she pressed back against him, twisting her arm around his neck to pull him even closer, whimpering as he sucked deep rosy kisses along her neck. With her free hand, she scrabbled at his robe, pushing it off his shoulders, and he tried to help as much as he could without actually lifting his head. She finally slapped his hands away and went to work at the knot in the sash, and John focused his attention back where it belonged, nibbling at the bottom of her ear. Ha! She said triumphantly as the knot loosened and John shrugged it off. Meredith hooked two fingers in the elastic of his boxers and tugged, letting it slap back against his belly. Why did you get to keep these? They made me take everything off. John settled back down on top of her, resting his weight on his elbows and grinned. Everything? She rolled her eyes, but he was too busy staring. Her robe had fallen down, revealing one pale shoulder, and the ridiculous ringlets and braids were slipping out of their pins and spilling across the pillow. Her lips were swollen and pink, and John could already see the evidence of his handiwork starting to darken at the base of her throat. What? She said suspiciously. You just look so hot, he breathed, and her cheeks turned even more pink. He leaned down and kissed her, taking his time to suck on her lower lip and the tip of her tongue. Oh, she said when John let her breathe. Well then, carry on. He chuckled and slid his fingers under the edges of the robe, pushing it off her shoulders. She wiggled her arms out and untied the sash, letting the robe slip down and pool underneath her. John didn't waste any time before leaning down and sucking the tip of her nipple into his mouth. She jerked beneath him and he grinned against the smooth skin of her breast. She skimmed her hands down his back, pulling at his boxers until he leaned back and shucked them off. He was back right away, kissing a trail between her breasts, dragging his tongue down her stomach. It was slightly rounded, soft, and utterly perfect, and he nuzzled her navel until she laughed and tried to push him away. He grinned again and slid backwards, dropping soft kisses until he could nose at the soft curls between her thighs. Meredith sucked in a sharp breath as he flicked out his tongue, and her knees fell open as John started licking in earnest. Her hands came down to twist gently in his hair, and he sneaked a peek at her from under his eyelashes. Her head was thrown back against the pillow, her mouth open and panting, and when he slid a finger inside her, one, then another, she gave a low throaty moan that he felt all along his spine. He was painfully hard, and watching her writhe and whimper so beautifully made him lick faster, the flat of his tongue pressed hard against her. She pulled at his hair and bucked up against his face, and John moved with her, licking and stroking until he could feel her clenching against him. She arched up off the bed and gave a stuttering groan as she came, holding everything taut, before collapsing bonelessly back onto the bed. He gave her clit one last little kiss, making her whimper, before crawling back up to spread himself out on top of her. She curled her arms around his neck and pulled him down into a kiss. John couldn't help but press down against one curve of her hip. "Mmm," she said, and shifted, moving so she could grind up against him. She lifted her right leg and pressed her heel into the small of his back, smirking up at him. John gave her a hot look and moved until he could push inside, both of them groaning at the first thrust. She was hot and slick and tight, and John bit his lip, trying desperately not to come right then. Her hips moved restlessly beneath him, and it was good, so good, he had to kiss her again and again as he thrust inside her. Her fingers clenched on his biceps, and he buried his face against her neck, kissing and licking any piece of skin he could reach as she whispered his name raggedly in his ear. "Meredith," he said hoarsely, lifting himself up so he could see her. Her breasts were covered with a fine sheen of sweat, and she was flushed all over. She reached for him, and he slid his hands along the soft skin of her arms before twisting their fingers together and pressing them back onto the bed. "I'm so close," she whimpered, her lips swollen and red. He was close, too. God, he was so close. He could feel it building along his spine, but he was trying to hold on, trying to wait so he could feel her come while he was buried inside her. She opened her eyes, pupils blown wide, and squeezed his fingers, her hips bucking against his. "John, John, oh, God, kiss me, kiss me." He caught her lips, and she sucked his tongue into her mouth, kissing him fiercely. Her legs tightened around his waist, and John groaned as she came, her muscles clenching wet and hot around him. He gasped into her mouth and gave one last thrust, white-hot pleasure spilling over, zinging through him as he pulsed inside her. His arms were about to give out, so he eased down, resting his forehead against hers while he tried to catch his breath. Meredith lay panting beneath him, their hands still twisted together. Finally, John slid to the side, his arm outstretched, and she moved over to rest her head on his chest. He curled his arm around her shoulders and used the other hand to pull the sheet up over them both. They lay there quietly for a while, Meredith tracing lazy patterns in his chest hair with her finger, and John pressing sleepy kisses to the top of her head. She shifted up onto one elbow to look at him. "So, we probably should have done that a long time ago." John grinned. "Just means we'll have to make up for lost time." 6 months before. "I had the cafeteria put together lunch for us so we could eat during the meeting. I hope everyone's okay with..." Elizabeth peeked at the tray. "Fried fish and potatoes?" Taylor nodded, Shepard shrugged, and Ronan already had his mouth full. The only person who didn't respond was McKay, who was staring at Ronan's plate. "McKay, you all right?" Shepard asked, as he covered his plate in ketchup. McKay pushed away from the table and stood. "I think I'm definitely going to..." and rushed to the nearby garbage can to vomit spectacularly. Even Ronan stopped eating. Shepard was already on his feet, as Elizabeth said, "Infirmary, now!" McKay nodded shakily, and Shepard put his hand on the small of her back, leading her toward the door. Elizabeth sat down with a thump. All of a sudden, it made a crazy sort of sense. McKay had been so tired lately, strangely emotional and pliant, and... well... Back to now. "You put him in the Wraith cell? Ofer, open the door!" Ronnie fluttered back into consciousness in time to see her come waddling through the door, followed by a nervous-looking Marine. "Ma'am, I'm not supposed to let anyone in. Colonel Shepard said..." "Colonel Shepard can suck it. Now get out!" The Marine gave her a horrified look. "Ma'am, out! Now!" He cast one last pained look at her and headed through the door. As soon as it slid shut, she turned back to Rodney. So, he hadn't imagined the enormous belly. He'd been kind of hoping it was a stunner-induced nightmare. You're, he flailed and gave up, finally just waving his hand at her. She sighed. "Knocked up? Yeah. But how?" She gave him a pointed look and he rolled his eyes. "You know what I mean. Who? And you're a genius. Why didn't you..." Shepard really needed to stop bursting in just when vitally important conversations got started. "McKay," he bellowed, "you can't just wander in and chat with prisoners." "Hey," Rodney felt a little hurt at being called a prisoner. He's not a prisoner. He's me, which is what I was trying to say before you dragged him off. He's me from an alternate dimension, and I'm letting him out because he obviously wasn't trying to come here, and I need to talk to him. He's staying in there till I'm sure he's not a danger to anyone. Ronnie's ears perked up. He was pretty good at reading Shepard, and there was something about the way he said anyone that definitely had some undercurrents. Girl McKay rolled her eyes. He is me. Why aren't you listening to what I'm saying? Besides, didn't we talk about this? You know, about you being less crazy? Shepard made the little scrunched-up face that usually indicated he knew he was wrong and was hoping everyone would be distracted by his adorably scrunched-up face. Luckily, this McKay seemed immune to it, because she just crossed her arms and thrust out her chin. It hit Rodney all at once. Oh my God, it's... Words were failing him again, so he just pointed between Shepard and the huge pregnant stomach. Girl McKay looked shifty, and Shepard got an incredibly goofy grin on his face. Which was when Shepard got a call over his radio, got the scrunchy face of, oh no, this is possibly bad, and dragged Girl McKay bodily from the room. Rodney sat down on the bench and tried to breathe. 6 months before. How long have you been feeling nauseated? Carson asked. McKay sighed and crossed her arms. I don't feel nauseated anymore. She wrinkled her nose. The fried fish smelled disgusting. I think it might have gone bad. Everyone who ate it is probably going to come in here with food poisoning. Carson said and scribbled something onto his clipboard. What? You don't believe me? Just wait. Give it a few hours and this place will be teeming. Oof. Carson stuck a thermometer in her mouth and ignored the vicious glare she sent him. Any other symptoms? Headache? Abdominal pain? She's been tired lately, Shepard said from where he was leaning against the other bed. McKay ripped the thermometer out of her mouth and handed it to Carson. Oh, please, show me one person on the science team who isn't tired. And no, Carson, no headache, no stomach pain. You slept through morning senior staff yesterday. McKay gave Shepard an icy glare and pointedly turned her head. Carson tried not to laugh and handed Shepard a blood pressure cuff. As long as you're here, Colonel, you can take your blood pressure. Shepard frowned, but Carson had already turned back to McKay. You got sick on PX8-436 a few days ago, Shepard added. McKay whirled around and jabbed her finger at him. Stop helping! Go away! She pointed at the door, and Shepard stood, hands up in surrender, as he backed out of the room. She turned back to Carson. I did not get sick. It was a planet where nobody bathed. I felt sick to my stomach and had to breathe through my nose. God, why is everyone making such a big deal out of this? Carson looked at the thermometer. Your temp is up a little, but nothing serious. Good, fine, can I go? Carson gave her a long, level stare. Meredith, I think I should get a urine sample. What? Why? Nausea, fatigue, slightly elevated temperature. He trailed off and waited for her to catch up. McKay's mouth dropped open. No, 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 that's not possible. Carson arched an eyebrow and McKay blushed. Okay, it's possible, but it's not, I mean, we use, look, it's not, I'm not. All right, let's just do a quick test to rule it out then, hmm? Oh my God! Now, for good. Hey, no need to push. Rodney looked up to see his Shepard being hustled into the room by two confused and embarrassed-looking Marines. Rodney, he said, and Rodney felt a ridiculous rush of relief. One of the Marines opened the cell door, and Shepard went in, albeit with a dark look. He clapped Rodney on the shoulder before turning back to the soldiers with his hands on his hips. I'm sorry, sir. Colonel Shepard's, your... He looked sick. Orders, he finally yelped. Shepard shrugged. I'm trying not to hold it against you, Sergeant. Trying. The two men exchanged uneasy looks and hurried from the room. Colonel, what are you doing here? Shepard sat down next to Rodney on the bench. We, everyone, got a little freaked out when you disappeared, Rodney, and when you didn't reappear, we didn't. There was a lot of commotion, and I kind of accidentally touched the thing, too. He looked vaguely embarrassed. Didn't matter anyway. We're both here, and now we need to get home. Didn't think I'd find you in the brig, though, Shepard smirked. Did you piss yourself off the moment you stepped through? I see you haven't met the me in this universe yet. Shepard shook his head and sat down on the bench next to Rodney, slouching back against the bars. Nope. I woke up to a group of Marines who didn't look too happy to see me. I asked for you, and they kindly showed me down here. So, alternate universe, huh? Shepard grinned at him. Have you met me yet? Am I awesome? Rodney scowled. How awesome could you be if you locked us both up down here? I'm sure I had a very good reason, he shrugged. Besides, I want to lock you up all the time. Elizabeth just never lets me. Oh, ha ha. "So, what did you do?" Shepard asked in the little sing-songy voice he used solely to piss Rodney off. "Nothing. Nothing happened. I got about 3 sentences out and..." "Rodney, obviously something happened or we wouldn't be sitting in the Wraith cell." Shepard sat up and rested his hands on his knees as he looked around. "Which, by the way, is kind of not cool. At least we put Rod in the visitor receiving room. Under guard, sure, but at least he had windows." Rodney glared at him and very deliberately ignored the reference to Rod. "I opened my eyes and I was here, or there anyway, in the lab. I figured out what must have happened with the device and asked for, well, me. And then I met this universe's me, and about 2 seconds later, you, Shepard, locked me in here. It's disturbing, actually, because..." Rodney broke off at the sound of voices from the outer room. "Ma'am, ma'am, I'm going to catch hell for this again. Please, ma'am, you're not supposed to..." "Shut up! I mean it this time, and I swear, if I see you so much as move for that radio, you'll regret it for the rest of your time here. I know where you live, Sergeant. Think about that." Meredith came barreling through the door and did a quick double-take when she saw Shepard sitting next to Rodney. Then she hit the switch to release the cell door and stop the electrical restraints. Rodney was really going to have to stop hoping that the enormous belly would be gone every time he saw her, but he decided his headache might be a little worth it to see her step up to Shepard and stick out her hand. "Dr. Meredith McKay." Shepard just stared at her, mouth open, as his eyes darted between her face, her stomach, and Rodney. She rolled her eyes at him and withdrew her hand, crossing her arms and resting them on her stomach. "Great. You're idiots. You've never seen a pregnant woman before, and your dimension babies are grown in pods?" Shepard snapped his mouth shut and shook his head. Sorry. It's just a lot to take in." Rodney went for the kill and leaned in. "Want to hear the best part? It's yours." Shepard and Shepard made hilarious, "I'm not freaking out" faces at each other, while Rodney and Meredith made hasty preliminary guesses at how to get them home. After the sixth go-around of Shepard, what, it was decided that Rodney Shepard would be John and Meredith Shepard would be Shepard. Rodney figured he could get away with "Hey, you" until they got home. "So let me get this straight." Elizabeth leaned forward and crossed her hands on the table in a familiar way that John found strangely comforting. It was weirdly nice to know that even alternate universe Elizabeth's got that "I can't believe you reached adulthood" looks on their faces. "You two," she said, nodding toward John and Rodney, "accidentally activated a device in an alternate universe that brought you here. You aren't sure exactly where it is, how it works, or how to fix it to send you home." John and Rodney exchanged a quick glance. "Yeah, that about covers it." "We have some ideas, Elizabeth," Meredith interrupted, and John let himself look over at the opposite end of the table, where the other Shepard sat next to her. He wasn't sure why it was easier to accept that his double was sitting across from him than the fact that McKay was a girl. He'd actually been trying not to look directly at her, mostly because he kept looking between her stomach and her breasts, and it was not really okay for him to be looking at either of them. She was Rodney, with girl parts. Really, really nice girl parts, in fact, the kind of girl parts he actually liked, all rounded curves and generous hips, and it was always about there that he remembered he shouldn't be thinking about that at all, and then he'd reflexively flick his eyes lower, which was bad because there was the belly, where a baby, of whom he, or at least another version of him, was the father, was currently gestating, and then he'd freak out, and it was just a vicious, vicious cycle. "John, still with us?" Everyone was staring at him. He wondered how long Elizabeth had been trying to get his attention. Meredith looked irritated that he hadn't been listening. Rodney had looked irritated since John had walked into his cell, and the other Shepherd was just giving him a knowing look that made John think he knew exactly what had just been happening in his head. Sorry. Sorry, my brain's trying to catch up. Go on." Elizabeth smiled graciously. "I think we can all sympathize with that sentiment. Meredith, please continue." He tried to catch Rodney's eye, but he had turned away, his mouth set in an unhappy line. John could relate. He wasn't even sure who should be the most freaked out. "As I was saying, considering that in their Atlantis the object had been found in an area we haven't explored yet, we," and she waved between herself and Rodney, "think it would be best if we form search teams and find it. We have a pretty good idea where it is. Hopefully we can just activate the device and send them home." "And by we, she means me," Shepard added. She turned to him with an irritated look. "No, by we, I mean we." Meredith opened her mouth to argue, and why wasn't John surprised that that crossed McKay gender lines as well, but Shepard shot her a narrow look that she returned with an equally narrow glare of her own. Elizabeth cleared her throat. "John? Shepard? I'll set up teams and send them down. We haven't opened up that area at all, so it's going to take a little time." "How long?" Shepard shrugged. "We'll get started right away, but there's some clearing of hallways that needs to be done. I'll send people down right away, but I'm guessing we won't be able to actually get the doors open to that area until tomorrow. Elizabeth settled back in her chair. Sounds like a plan. She turned and gave John and Rodney a warm smile. Until then, gentlemen, enjoy your stay. I don't know where your quarters in your Atlantis are, but I hope you'll find the rooms we found for you comfortable. Shepard grinned. I'll show you. No, I want to take Rodney to the lab first, so you should just take John, Meredith brightened. And then lunch? So, you and McKay, huh? John looked at the two McKays walking in front of them, their heads together as they talked. Shepard grinned. Yeah, pretty weird, huh? I mean, your McKay's a guy. Yeah, well, yours is a girl, John shot back, and she's... She trailed off, and Shepard got a look on his face that John recognized but couldn't put a name on. Whatever it was, it seemed like 150 different kinds of happy, and it made John's gut twist in a weird way that he wasn't sure he was ready to explore. Shepard shot him a quick glance. So, you and Rodney? Don't, John said sharply, looking up to see if either one of the McKays had overheard, but they were both still engrossed in whatever Meredith had on her tablet. Shepard put up his hands. Hey, I wasn't going to say anything. John frowned. I hope that's not really what I look like when I lie. The guest quarters were nice. In fact, they were very nice, and Rodney was half considering requesting a transfer when they got back. If they got back. Luckily, the door chimed before he had too long to think about the very real possibility that they were never going to find their way back to their Atlantis. He went over and hit the door release, which slid open to reveal Cadman. What do you want? She blatantly looked him up and down. When I heard there was another McKay, I had to check it out. She tilted her head to the side. I gotta say, not bad. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Relax, McKay. Wait, it's Rodney, right? He sighed and crossed his arms. Yes. Just give these to Meredith, okay, Rodney? She shoved the books into his hands, and as he fumbled to hold on to them, he noticed some of the titles. Baby names A to Z, 50,000 unique baby names. He looked up at her. Are these yours? No, my sister had a baby last year, and I asked her to send them for Meredith. Not that it's any of your business. Fine, fine, I'll give them to her. He turned to go back into his room, but Cadman poked her head around the door and peeked in. Whoa, this room is way nicer than mine. I know, I was just thinking that I should ask for it when I get home. He winced, so much for the not thinking about it plan. Where are Meredith's quarters anyway? I was supposed to get her before I went to lunch. Cadman bobbed her head to the left. Their quarters are two levels down from here. I'll take you if you want. Rodney gulped. He wasn't sure why it hadn't occurred to him that Shepard and Meredith would be in the same room. It was just all still really startling. I'm sure I can find it on my own. Cadman headed toward the door. Well, maybe I want, she called over her shoulder. When she realized he wasn't following her, she stopped and turned back around, hands on her hips. Come on, McKay. Then her eyes widened. Oh my God, you're totally freaking out. Don't be ridiculous. You are, she pointed her finger at him. You've got the same look on your face that Mare gets when she talks about giving birth. I'm disconcerted. There's a difference. She snorted. Yeah, right. Shut up, please. He stomped over to her and pushed the books into her arms. If you're coming along, you can carry these. Rodney, seriously, you've got to lighten up. Oh, thank you, Cadman, for that inspirational advice. Maybe next you can tell me to hang in there, or even remind me that tomorrow is another day. Hey, I've got another piece of advice. How about shut the fuck up? Nice talk, Sugarmouth. You want to go, McKay, because I'll... I'm sorry to interrupt the hate sex, or whatever improbable event that was about to happen, but I'm hungry. They both turned to see Meredith standing in the doorway with her arms crossed, looking annoyed. Cadman just grinned and handed the books to her. Don't be a bitch, Mare. I'm 500 months pregnant. I get to bitch as much as I want. But thanks for the books. Meredith waved one of them at Rodney. You have to help me with the name. John's useless. He only likes Emma and Desiree, and he hates everything else I suggest. Rodney frowned. Desiree McKay? No, and just no. Also, it sounds like a porn star name. Wait, the last name is going to be McKay? Cadman laughed. Oh, that is so my cue to leave. She slapped Rodney in the back. It was nice to meet you, Rodney. Then she winked. Hang in there. Oh, ha, ha, he yelled after her as she disappeared out the door. Let's go, Meredith said. I was serious about being hungry. Rodney raised an eyebrow at the fruit cups littering Meredith's tray. She, in turn, wrinkled her nose at his jello. I can't stand the blue stuff anymore. I don't like to eat anything that's colored too brightly. I don't know why. It's just been that way ever since I got pregnant. That doesn't seem fair, Rodney said. She snorted. There are worse things, believe me. I do. Please feel free not to tell me any of them. There was a murmur in the room, and Rodney looked up to see the two shepherds walk in together and join the line. He didn't realize he was staring until Meredith quirked an eyebrow at him. "You can ask me about it, you know." Rodney looked away as Shepherd laughed and elbowed John. "Ask you what?" "Whatever you want," she said, and waggled her eyebrows. He felt his cheeks flame. "I don't know what you..." "Forget it, Rodney. I'm you, remember?" She glanced over her shoulder. "Hurry up, though. They're almost through the line." A quick look confirmed that the shepherds were indeed standing in front of the dessert table, flashing twin grins at Mabel, who appeared to be on the verge of passing out. "Fine," Rodney hissed. "So, how is it?" Meredith gave him a brilliant smile. "Fantastic!" Rodney spluttered into his coffee, and Meredith burst out laughing, just as the shepherd sat down at the table. "What's so funny?" John asked. Meredith winked at Rodney. "Absolutely nothing." "You'll have to tell me later," Shepherd said to Meredith, who just grinned and nodded. Rodney and John looked down at their plates. It was hard not to feel slightly uncomfortable when they were reminded that this McKay and Shepherd were in an actual relationship. For some reason, the stomach, the most obvious reminder, had stopped being quite as shocking. It was things like little smiles and shared secrets that still threw Rodney for a loop. Meredith pushed back from the table, startling Rodney out of his thoughts. "There's Kincaid. I've got a bone to pick with anthropology, and I..." "Oh, what?" Both shepherds were snickering helplessly. "A bone to pick with anthropology," John said. "It's funny," Shepherd added. Meredith and Rodney rolled their eyes in unison before she took off after the hapless Kincaid. "Puns are the lowest form of humor," Rodney sniffed, but it didn't matter to the shepherds, who were still giggling. "Oh, God, you're about 2 seconds away from a high five, aren't you?" Rodney turned away from the two of them and watched as Meredith talked to, well, if he was being honest, berated, Kincaid. She was shorter than Jeannie, but that didn't seem to matter. There was something vaguely terrifying about her anyway, and Rodney couldn't help but appreciate the way Kincaid's face was paling rapidly. The stomach was, of course, still horrifying, but he had to admit that the female version of him wasn't hard on the eyes. "What's wrong, buddy?" "Do I look better as a woman?" Rodney asked as he continued to stare across the room at Meredith. John leaned back and looked like he desperately wished he hadn't asked. "It's not that I'm not an incredibly attractive man, obviously, but the hips seem to work better on her somehow, and the chest, not that you should be looking at her chest." He glared at John, who had made the mistake of looking over in Meredith's direction. "Stop staring at her chest this instant." "I wasn't..." "It's just typical of you, isn't it? You shepherds have already had your wicked way with her, and now you can't stop gloating about it." The shepherds exchanged looks, and John rolled his eyes. "Our wicked way? Oh my God, Rodney, seriously, are you high?" Rodney shoved his tray away and stood up. He pointed at both of them. "You two should be ashamed of yourselves," he said, and stomped away. John had spent the afternoon with Shepherd clearing the corridor that led to the room McKay and McKay had decided was the most likely candidate for the device. The hallway had been littered with debris left over from the time it spent flooded with seawater, and there was a thick layer of algae on practically everything. The work itself wasn't that hard, but it was messy and kind of disgusting, and by the time they decided to break for supper, John felt like he'd been swimming in a dirty fish tank. He turned on Shepherd's suggestion of supper in favor of a hot shower and promised to stop by later. Now, scrubbed clean and feeling closer to human, John sat in Meredith's desk chair and looked around the room. It was the first time John had actually been in their room, and even though it made him feel like an idiot, it was kind of freaking him out. It was weird to see his things scattered amongst someone else's stuff. The closet door was open, and John could see black and gray t-shirts mixed in with blue science uniforms. There were two desks pushed against the far wall, one littered with bits of electronic equipment, scientific journals, and two laptops. It sat in marked contrast to the one next to it that held only a laptop and a lamp. There was a Johnny Cash poster, not the one that John had at home, he was interested to note, tacked up next to Meredith's diplomas. There were two toothbrushes on the bathroom shelf, large boots tangled together with smaller ones. It was just really strange. Shepherd was propped up against the headboard with his legs sprawled out in front of him. Meredith was on the bed, too, sitting with her back against the wall as she flipped through one of the baby name books Cadman had given her. Occasionally, she'd throw out names to the room, and Shepherd would laugh and veto them. Her legs were resting on Shepherd's calves, and they looked so comfortable together, so easy in a way that made John feel strangely jealous. And there was the added complication that the bottom hem of her shirt kept riding up, exposing the smooth, stretched skin of her belly, and John couldn't stop looking at it. She looked up at him just as he was about to look away, and he blushed, embarrassed without really knowing why. Then suddenly she grimaced. She waved frantically at John, and when he leaned forward, she grabbed his hand and pulled him across the bed to press it to her stomach. It was awkward, with one hand planted on the bed between Shepard's legs while the other was stretched out across Meredith's stomach, and he was about to pull away when he felt a little nudge against his palm. He gasped and pulled back. "Was that a..." he said, and Meredith nodded, her eyes big and blue. "I think that was a foot, because right now it feels like I've got an elbow in my spleen," she said, grimacing slightly and shifting her weight. Shepard grabbed a pillow from under his head and handed it to Meredith, who took it and shoved it behind her back. "That's really, really crazy," she said, and he laughed. "Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say." It wasn't that John had never thought about kids. He had. He just never planned to have any, no matter what he said to Rodney when there was radiation present. Seeing Meredith and Shepard together hadn't changed that. No, he was having a hard enough time dealing with the fact that it didn't seem to matter which universe he was in. He couldn't escape this weird thing with McKay. He looked over at Shepard. He thought at first that this Shepard was different than him, that it had been easier somehow for him to fall into whatever he had with Meredith. But it was possible he hadn't given himself enough credit. After all, some pervy alien race did actually have to make them do it in the first place. John knew the feeling. He and Rodney had been dancing around the thing between them for so long that it seemed almost impossible anything would ever happen on its own. On second thought, maybe he should be hoping for some pervy aliens of his own. There was a knock on the door, and Meredith yelled, "Come in!" The door slid open, and Rodney stepped through wearing the same irritated expression he'd had since they arrived. "What are you all doing in here?" "Rodney, you're just in time." Meredith waved her book at him. "I need someone to back me up." Shepard snorted. "I need someone to tell her that we are not naming the baby Euphemie." Rodney snagged the chair from the other desk and rolled it over to sit next to John. "I don't know, I like Euphemie." "Oh God, I should have known," Shepard groaned, and Meredith smacked him lightly with her book. "Fine, you suggest something besides Emma."
"Isabella?"
McKay frowned.
"Too popular."
"Victoria?"
"Too romance novel-y."
"Francesca?"
McKay grinned.
"Hey, I like that." Meredith was smiling too.
"We could call her Frankie. I like Frankie. It's a good name for a little girl. And then she can use the more formal Francesca when she publishes."
"Publishes? She's still a fetus," Shepard snorted. McKay glared at him and turned back to Meredith with a smile. "You should try to get her started in all the higher maths as soon as possible." John reached over and smacked Rodney on the back of the head.
"Hey, Frankie says relax, McKay."
The next morning.
"Stop interrogating my minions," Meredith hissed in Rodney's ear, startling him enough that he knocked his coffee cup over.
Zelenka didn't look up from his laptop, just reached over and threw some napkins in his direction.
"What is your problem?" Rodney said, grabbing a pile to sop up the spill.
She maneuvered herself down into the chair across from him.
"Stop talking to them."
"Right. Care to explain to me how I'm supposed to work in here without talking to anyone?" Rodney found himself staring with fascination as one corner of her mouth curved down as she jutted out her chin.
"Shut up! You know what I'm talking about!"
Rodney totally did know what she was talking about.
"I don't have a clue what you're talking about," he said airily.
Her eyes narrowed.
"Don't play stupid with me, Meredith. It's not going to work. I'm on to you."
"Oh, fine," Rodney threw up his hands. "I just wanted to see what they think of you, okay? Just a harmless little experiment on my part.
Stop acting like I was plotting a coup," he added in a furious whisper.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Simpson trying to pretend she wasn't eavesdropping, and he leveled a glare at her. She hastily put her head back down.
"Well, I don't like it. It makes me feel like I'm back at the lab at Northeastern with Higgins skulking around to make sure everything was all right," she snorted.
"Just making sure my ovaries hadn't accidentally blown anything up is more like it."
"What? Higgins loved me.
Well, tolerated me, at least."
"Oh, I'm sure he did, what with your having a penis and all."
This time Rodney snorted.
"Don't even try to insinuate that I had an easier time because I was a man. They wouldn't even let me have a key."
Meredith just glared at him.
"Don't you think that probably had more to do with the fact that you were 17 than anything else?"
"I was 16, so ha, and well, yes, probably. But still, I didn't exactly win any friends when I tested out of my senior year and into the grad program at 18. Rodney crossed his arms. "And as for your scientists, I was testing a hypothesis. Don't you want to know what they said?"
"No."
"Fine, tell me."
"They like you."
He wasn't sure that this was actually true. He hadn't had a large sample size, and the results were a little hard to decipher. Still, he felt bizarrely wounded by the implication that he'd had an easier time at school, and childish as it was, he went with it. Meredith looked aghast.
"They do not!"
"They do."
That's a scurrilous lie!
It had actually gone something like this. Rodney asked Miko, Raddick, and Kavanaugh, "What do you think of Dr. McKay?" Miko gushed for 14 minutes. Raddick rolled his eyes and mumbled something about robots before scurrying away. And strangely, Kavanaugh, who had been included in the impromptu survey only because he'd been loitering in the hallway, had what Rodney found to be the most interesting answer. "She hissed at me once," Kavanaugh had said thoughtfully. Rodney blinked at him. "What do you mean?" "Like this," he said, holding his hands up like claws, "like a cat." "What did you do?" Rodney gave him a look. "What do you think I did? I ran away. It was fucked up." "Would I lie about that?" "They'd probably think I asked you to do it." She sat back, her arms crossed over her chest, and tossed an angry look around the room at the scientists, who weren't even trying anymore to pretend they weren't listening. "I hope you're happy now. It's hard enough to maintain some kind of control over them without you in here poking around." "Dictator," he muttered, and she kicked him underneath the table. He shrieked and grabbed his shin. "Ow! What was that for?" Out of the corner of his eye, Rodney saw Simpson and a blonde guy he didn't recognize start inching toward the door. "You deserved it!" "Hey, you're the one that started it. I can't help it if your hormones are making you unreasonable." Without a word, Zelenka hopped off his stool and headed for the door, shooing Miko out in front of him. Rodney turned back to Meredith. "See? Your crazy made everyone leave." The chair squeaked as she whipped around to look. "Not everyone. See? Peterson's still here." It was true. Peterson was in the corner, his hand poised halfway to his coffee cup. Rodney rolled his eyes. "He just got trapped there and Zelenka cut him loose." He glared into the corner and Peterson cringed back behind his laptop. "Why are you so worked up about it anyway? It was just a few questions." "Ha! Don't think I haven't noticed the way you keep looking at me." "I haven't been looking any... Well, okay, yes, the whole pregnancy thing is disturbing, to say the least, which is a perfectly natural reaction, I'd like to point out." "No, that's not it. There's something else." She leaned forward and peered at him. "Stop looking at me like that," he snapped. "I'd like to see how you react when you accidentally travel to an alternate timeline. Besides, there's a certain amount of introspection that inevitably occurs when presented with... She snapped her fingers at him and pointed. "Aha! I knew it!" "What? No, 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 you don't know anything." Rodney scrambled up, holding his laptop in front of him like a shield. "I'm sorry, and I won't talk to anyone else ever again." And discretion being the better part of valor, he fled the lab. 1 hour later, Rodney came in through his door to find Meredith sitting on the edge of his bed and a sheepish-looking shepherd standing beside her. "Hi. I hope you don't mind, but I let us in." Meredith shifted on the bed, and Rodney watched as Shepherd started packing pillows behind her until she slapped his hands away. Shepherd moved away to slouch against the far wall and crossed his arms. Meredith's eyes were lit up, and Rodney felt a peculiar sense of dread about the look on her face. "Can I help you with something?" he asked, not even bothering to hide his irritation. "No," Meredith said, beaming. "We're here to help you." "Shouldn't we be in the lab for that?" She shot Shepherd a look that Rodney recognized as, "Jump in any second here." Shepherd tilted his head back against the wall until he was staring at the ceiling. "I feel bad about earlier, all right, but it made me start thinking about the fact that between the two of us, we should be able to work this out." Rodney felt eerily certain they weren't talking about the device. "Work what out?" "You and your shepherd," she said, waving her hand airily. "And then it hit me. We've got an inside man. I mean, it's perfect. He's here without being here. You can, you know, without any repercussions." She jerked her thumb at Shepherd and beamed back at Rodney. Rodney looked back and forth between Meredith and Shepherd as a horrifying thought occurred to him. "You mean, I'm not going to... Are you crazy?" he spluttered. "Don't be a moron," she said, rolling her eyes. "I meant that you can ask him questions that you can't ask your shepherd. I'm not pimping him out. Idiots." "Don't worry, Rodney. That's what I thought she meant at first, too," Shepherd said. "I can't be held responsible for your ridiculous jumps in logic," Meredith snapped. Rodney groaned and covered his face with his hands. "First of all, what gave you the impression that I needed help in this particular area?" "Oh, please, it's obvious." She must have noticed Rodney's stricken look, because she hurried on with a, "To me, anyway, not to anyone else, just to me, because I'm you. And I totally saw you checking out his ass in the lab this morning, so don't even try to deny it." "Shut up, please." "And I wasn't." "You shut up, and you so were. Hey, I'm not throwing stones." She waved a hand at her stomach. "Clearly I'm not immune to that ass, because, hello, the spawn of Shepherd is currently incubating here." She looked over at Shepherd thoughtfully, who appeared to be examining his nails with great intensity. "It's a very nice ass, after all." Shepherd pushed away from the wall. "Okay, this ass is leaving in 2 minutes, so let's get this over with so I can go and pretend that none of it ever happened. Everybody ready? Good."
No, no, I'm not ready, Rodney spluttered. Why do you even assume that? Not that it matters, since he's... I mean, come on, you're Shepherd Strait.
Meredith rolled her eyes. If gender isn't constant, why should sexuality be? Besides, I kind of get a vibe from him.
Shepherd snorted, and Meredith swiveled around to glare at him. What? I'll have you know that I got a vibe from you, too, when I first met you. You know, with the hair and the tight shirts and the whole... She waved her hand in the air in front of him. Swagger thing.
Rodney found himself nodding along.
Also, you smell really good.
She narrowed her eyes.
Too good.
Shepherd rolled his eyes.
Oh, well, as long as you weren't basing it on any stereotypes.
Don't get all huffy. I got to know you, and it was pretty obvious you were straight. All the bimbos kind of tipped me off.
You really want to go there, McKay? After all...
Rodney exploded. Hello? Can we get back to me here? This entire conversation, ridiculous as it may be, is moot. Your shepherd is straight. My shepherd is straight. End of story.
There was a moment of silence while Rodney stared morosely into his coffee. Meredith turned to Shepherd, clearly about to elbow him in the ribs to get him to say something, but he wouldn't meet her eyes. That's when Rodney realized he was blushing.
What?
She shrieked, making Shepherd wince.
Meredith's eyes got very big.
Wait a second, you haven't, have you?
Shepherd shifted uncomfortably in his chair and crossed his arms, studiously not looking at either of them.
John!
Look, I don't want to, you know, spill the guy's secrets or anything. Besides, he said, sighing and rubbing the back of his neck self-consciously, who knows if he even had the same experience as I did.
Experiences? Rodney bellowed. Plural? Meredith squeaked.
Then her eyes narrowed thoughtfully.
You're going to tell me about those experiences.
You can't possibly be jealous of something that happened years ago, Meredith.
I don't know if jealous is the word I would use. Maybe intrigued?
Shepherd arched an eyebrow suspiciously.
Really?
Meredith nodded.
Really?
She nodded again, this time with a wide smile. The dirty little smirk Shepherd gave Meredith made Rodney profoundly uncomfortable.
Hello, I'm still here. Before you two embark on erotic story time, I want more information.
Shepherd turned back to him with a rueful expression.
Look, I don't think I should tell you anything. Just ask him, or make a move, or something. I can't imagine what good it's going to do to hear any of the stuff I have to tell you.
Rodney scowled.
No, no, and no. Besides, you can't just drop a bombshell like that and not back it up with details.
He held up a hand.
I won't tell anyone, I swear. I'll be the soul of discretion, I promise.
I want to hear too, Meredith interrupted, and I'm the pregnant one, so you have to do what I say.
Shepherd groaned and hung his head. Fine, just a few details, but that's it. But you are not to tell him I told you anything, all right?
John and Shepherd stood back as Lauren supervised the team using a blowtorch to cut through the remaining door. It turned out that the thick film of algae that covered everything also dried hard as a rock, and the door was as good as cemented shut.
So, what's up?
John flicked a piece of moss dust off his sleeve and wrinkled his nose.
Other than really needing a shower, you mean?
Yeah, other than that. Shepherd gave him a sideways glance before looking off down the hall. Then he looked back at John with a vaguely uncomfortable smile.
How are things?
He shrugged.
Things are good.
Well, good. That's good.
Yeah.
At least now that the algae was dry, John could lean against it. He glanced over at the other shepherd. It was bizarre to look at yourself standing next to you. It was also kind of hard not to catalog flaws. Like, what was with those...
Hey, you're staring...
Sorry, you think I'd be over it by now?
Shepherd shrugged self-consciously.
It's okay, I'm not exactly over it myself.
That was something that had been bothering John for days. I couldn't tell, you seem to be handling this a lot better than I am.
I don't know, maybe. I've got bigger things to freak out about, I guess.
Ouch, direct hit.
He swallowed heavily and tried not to feel like a total ass.
Yeah, I guess you do.
I gotta say, though, you look like you're doing pretty good with that, too.
Shepherd snorted, and suddenly John got the impression that he wasn't quite as together about it as he'd like everyone to think. Then he got a shifty look on his face, one John recognized as guilt.
So I may have told Rodney something.
About me.
About some things. From my past.
John felt a cold shiver run down his back.
What kind of things, he said.
Shepherd closed his eyes.
The kind of things that if you know what kind of things I might be talking about... are the kind of things I told him.
Why? Why would you do that?
Shepherd looked pained. First of all, they ganged up on me. Second...
There was a crackle, and Raddick's voice came over the radio.
Medical team to Lab 3. There has been an accident, and McKay has been injured.
Whatever Shepard was about to say was forgotten as the two of them sprinted toward the transporter. They both came skidding around the corner and found a soot-stained Meredith sitting in one of the chairs outside the infirmary door. Shepard stopped dead in his tracks, and John had to dodge to the side so he wouldn't crash into him. Meredith threw up her hands as soon as she saw them and started babbling. There was a bandage on her wrist and a few little blood smears on her jacket, and Shepard was on her in a blink, pulling at her coat and checking for injuries. "It wasn't my fault, I swear. He knocked me out of the way and..." That's when John realized she was talking to him, and the thick knot of worry in his throat dropped all the way down to his stomach. She batted Shepard's hands away. "It's not mine. I'm fine. I'm fine. We're fine," she said, until Shepard finally stopped fussing. John felt sick. "Where's Rodney?" "He's in there. There was a little explosion." Shepard groaned and dropped into the chair next to her, and John's face must have gone as white as it felt because she hurried to explain. "A little explosion," I said, "and he knocked me out of the way, but he's okay, really. He hit his head, but Carson says he's fine." Shepard glared at her. "What the hell, McKay? I mean, seriously, what the hell? What were you doing? Do I even want to know?" She paused, clearly thinking about it. "No," she said finally, "you don't want to know." Carson poked his head out the door and his eyes landed on Meredith. "Ah, there you are. Meredith, I'm not done with you yet." "You said you were fine," Shepard bellowed. "I am," she hissed, and glared at Carson as she followed him behind a curtain, with Shepard close behind. Rodney was sitting on a bed on the opposite side of the room and busily scowling at the nurse taking his blood pressure. He seemed to brighten up a little when he saw John. "Save me?" The nurse gave him a tight smile and left. John put his hands behind his back and tried not to look as worried as he felt. It clearly wasn't working. "Why are you looking at me like that? I didn't do anything." Rodney scowled in the direction of Meredith's curtain. "It was all her idea anyway," he yelled. "Oh, thanks a lot," Meredith yelled back. "What happened?" John asked in a low voice. It was hard to even look at Rodney in the bed with a bloody bandage taped to his head. "We were looking for a way to recharge an artifact that they found in the southern wing. I'd never seen it before, but we figured that if there was ever a time to try and fix it, it was while they had two of us." He shoved the blanket off his legs and swung them over the side. "It doesn't matter. I'm not spending the night in here." "Oh, yes, you are," Carson said as he appeared around the curtain. "No, come on. I'm not even hurt." "You hit your head, Rodney. I don't want you wandering off alone with a head injury." Rodney looked crestfallen for a second. Then he perked up and snapped his fingers. "I'll just go to the lab." "Rodney, you need to rest," Carson sighed. "And I want someone to watch you while you do." "I'll do it," John said, and Rodney gave him a surprised but grateful look. "I'll keep an eye on him." Carson smiled. "Then I'll release him into your care, Colonel." They stopped by Meredith's bed on the way out. Shepard was sprawled in one of the chairs next to the bed, where Meredith was asleep, the blanket up around her neck and her hands curled protectively around her stomach. "She's fine. She just gets really tired at night lately," Shepard said in a low voice. "That's normal. After all, the fetus basically feeds off her like a parasite," Rodney mumbled. John winced. "Wow, that's a charming description, Rodney." "Well, it's true. It's totally taken over her system. Practically everything besides breathing is directed toward it. Even the volume of her blood has increased." He stopped when he realized both Shepherds were staring at him. "What?" "Since when do you know anything about pregnant women?" John asked. Rodney raised his chin. "I may have done some reading the other day." John caught himself smiling at Rodney and turned to find Shepard staring at him with a smirk. There was the problem with being around your double. He usually had a pretty good idea what you were thinking. Flustered, he turned back to Rodney. "We're almost through the door. We should be able to get to the device tomorrow." "Good, excellent." Shepard was nodding. "Sounds good to me. I mean, not that it hasn't been interesting having you here. Just figured you'd be glad to get home." "Yeah, we appreciate your hospitality, but it's time for us to be headed home." "Okay, if we're all done being laconic, maybe we can continue this conversation in the morning," Rodney snapped. "Look, Rodney, Shepard started and broke off, shoving his hands into his pockets. "Meredith told me what happened in the lab and how you pushed her out of the way." "Oh, it was nothing. Forget about it. We have to, you know, protect the McKay genes. The two of them looked about as uncomfortable as John felt, so he clapped Rodney on the shoulder and started to steer him toward the door. "Let's go, McKay. Time for bed." "Thank you, Colonel. I think I know the way." John caught a glimpse of Shepard chuckling at them as he followed Rodney out the door. They stood outside Rodney's quarters for a few uncomfortable minutes while Rodney fiddled with his bandage. Finally, John pushed past him, ignoring the surprised look on Rodney's face. He stood awkwardly in the middle of the room as Rodney sat down on the bed.
I didn't think you were actually going to stay. I mean, you don't have to. I can just call you in an hour so you can see that I didn't slip into a coma.
No, I'll stay. You should rest. I'll just read, he finished inanely.
Rodney turned his face up, looking limp and exhausted.
Just go, okay?
What? No, I said I was going to stay, and I'll stay.
Rodney looked away, but he looked so jumpy and nervous that John couldn't stand it anymore, and something inside him just snapped.
What's going on? He blurted out, and Rodney froze.
Nothing. I'm just tired. Head injury and stuff.
That's bullshit, and you know it, John hissed, perversely pleased to see the startled look on Rodney's face.
I don't know what you're talking about.
McKay, seriously, what the hell?
It wasn't lost on John that he'd heard Shepard say the same thing an hour before to Meredith. Apparently it wasn't lost on Rodney either, because his face went through three different colors before his mouth straightened into an unhappy line.
Trust me, you don't want to know.
I do.
Well, maybe I don't want to talk about it, Rodney shot back and crossed his arms huffily.
Fine, be a jerk.
Rodney gaped at him.
I'm the jerk? You're the one who...
He broke off.
What?
Never mind, okay? He said pleadingly. I hit my head, and now I don't know what I'm saying. So, thank you for springing me from the infirmary, but now you can go away.
Look, you've been acting weird ever since we got here.
Are you freaked out about... Is it the whole, the baby thing? Or the fact that they're... You know, because I'm freaked out, too.
Hurt twisted across Rodney's face, and John instantly regretted it.
Well, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do about it.
John slumped, feeling deflated.
I didn't mean, I'm sorry. That came out wrong. He dragged his hand over his face.
I just want to know what you're thinking.
I'm jealous, okay? Rodney looked miserable. I'm jealous of her. Happy now?
What?
Don't make me say it again.
Wait, which part?
Any of it?
John shook his head. No, which part are you jealous of?
The having you part, obviously. Rodney looked up at him with pleading eyes. Now, I'll just chalk this up to my obvious concussion and pretend I don't remember saying any of it if you just leave.
John didn't even realize he was moving until he was right in front of Rodney. He reached down and curled his hand around Rodney's jaw, who looked up at him blinking, still uncomprehending. He leaned down and brushed their lips together, barely even a touch, and Rodney let out a little breath like he'd been holding it in forever. Then all of a sudden, Rodney's hands were on his shoulders, and he was pulling him down, dragging John into his lap, and they were kissing and kissing, and all John could think was that they'd wasted so much time talking when they could have just been doing this. They stayed like that for a long time, with John's hands curled around Rodney's face, Rodney's big hands under his t-shirt, stroking softly along his back, sharing long, deep kisses that made John's toes tingle. Then Rodney's fingers started slipping down the back of his pants, sweeping lower and lower, and John was pushing his hips forward, grinding against Rodney's erection. He fumbled with Rodney's pants until he got the button open, the zipper, until he could slip his hand inside and get Rodney's hot, hard dick into his hand. Rodney groaned and dropped his forehead against John's, watching wide-eyed as John got his own zipper open. They both gasped the first time their dicks pressed together, and John didn't want much else other than to feel Rodney move against him. I wanna. Like this, Rodney. Like this.
Rodney wrapped his hand around both of them and squeezed, rubbing and twisting until John was whimpering into his mouth.
Yeah, like this, Rodney. God.
John could hear himself babbling against Rodney's lips. He flung his leg over his hip, pressing them together, and just held on as Rodney stroked them both together in his hand. They were grinding against each other with Rodney's other hand wrapped around the back of John's neck, and he tried to say something because he wanted Rodney to kiss him while he came, but Rodney was moving away.
Let me... Come on, I want to...
Rodney said, crawling down John's body, and John arched up off the bed when the hot, perfect suction of Rodney's mouth closed over the head of his dick. It was perfect, perfect, as Rodney licked and sucked, and John couldn't stop running his hands over Rodney's head, his fingers in his hair, feeling the muscles work as Rodney swallowed him over and over. There were more places he wanted to touch Rodney, though, so he grasped at Rodney's shoulders until he pulled off with a pop, his mouth red and swollen. John yanked at him, hissing as the rough material of his pants slid against his dick as Rodney moved up. Rodney's fingers scrabbled at his boxers, and John managed to push both pairs down in one jerky motion. Then it was yes, yes, smooth, slick, hot, pressed together, Rodney whimpering as he grabbed for John's hips, both of them moving and sliding together, and John was coming, and Rodney too, and it was... They lay back on the bed, tangled together, both of them panting. John reached out and twisted their fingers together, and Rodney shifted slightly until he got a pillow under both their heads.
With his other hand, he stroked small circles low on John's belly, and John leaned over to give the bandage on Rodney's head a soft kiss. "I'm glad we could have this little talk," he murmured, and Rodney laughed softly. He pressed his face against Rodney's neck and closed his eyes. The device looked just like Rodney remembered it, short and squat with a silver housing and vaguely resembling a blender. He and John were standing in front of it while everyone else stood a safe distance away. Meredith awkwardly hugged both of them. "It's been something," Shepard said as he shook both their hands. "Yeah, it's been something, all right," John laughed. Rodney and Meredith just rolled their eyes at each other. "Too bad you have to leave before the baby's born," Shepard said. Rodney shook his head. "I'm very, very glad we're leaving before then." Then he looked mildly horrified. "No offense, of course." Meredith laughed and stepped back to stand next to Shepard, who threw his arm around her shoulders. "None taken." "Let's do this thing, buddy," John said, bumping his shoulder against Rodney's. They both reached out their hands, and there was a flash of white light and the sickening sensation of being jerked off balance, and Rodney caught the briefest glimpse of John next to him before pain exploded across the back of his head and everything went dark. When Rodney finally managed to work his eyes open, he found himself lying in the infirmary. Radek was sitting next to his bed, typing quietly on a laptop. "Did it work?" he mumbled. His mouth was painfully dry, and he almost wept when Radek hastily set the laptop aside and poured him a glass of water. "Thank you." "You are welcome. And in answer to your question, yes, it worked. You are back where you started, in the correct timeline." "Thank God!" He fell back against the pillows. "How long have I been asleep?" Radek checked his watch. 3 or 4 hours. You hit your head when you came back, and Dr. Beckett thought you should sleep as long as you could, considering your previous head injury. "What about John? Colonel Shepard?" "He is fine. Beckett cleared him, and he went to debrief with Dr. Weir." "Okay, good." Rodney closed his eyes briefly and seriously considered going back to sleep. "Did anything happen while I was gone?" "We were attacked by zombie kittens, but Ronan ate them and saved everyone," Radek said. Rodney's eyes flew open. "What? Really?" "No, but it was most enjoyable to see your face." "Oh, thanks a lot. Like I haven't had enough shocks to my system in the last few days." "Ah, yes. Colonel Shepard told us about Meredith," Radek chuckled. "Why is it, I wonder, that you keep running into other McKays?"
"I don't know, but it's starting to give me a headache," John said as he came strolling around the corner.
Rodney couldn't help the ridiculous smile that slid across his face. He only hoped Radek hadn't noticed, although judging from the smirk, he absolutely had. Radek coughed. "I am needed in the lab, I'm sure. I must deliver the bad news that you have returned." John waited until Radek had gone before coming over to lean against the edge of Rodney's bed. "Hey, how are you feeling?" "My head hurts, but that's about it. I've got a serious case of deja vu. Wasn't I just in the infirmary with a head wound?" John grinned at him. "That time didn't end so badly for you, did it?" He leaned down to whisper in Rodney's ear. "How about we break you out of here and go for a full reenactment?" The end.